This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios today with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who is the chief adult oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of giving you the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Our program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. And if you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us, and we'll share them with the expert who's visiting with us. And you can email us at healthline@yale.edu. And if you'd like to listen to past editions about Healthline or to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are now available at the Yale Cancer Center website, which is www.yalecancercenter.org.
Today, our special guest expert is Dr. Stuart Seropian, who is Associate Professor of Medicine in the Section of Medical Oncology at the Yale Cancer Center and a leading oncologist in the treatment of hematologic malignancies and bone marrow transplantation right here at the Yale Cancer Center. Stuart, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation to come and talk about transplant.
Well, Stuart, let's begin by talking about stem cell transplants and what are they? Can you explain it to the listeners?
Sure. I think it's important to provide some definitions because there is, I think, some confusion about what stem cells are and how they're used in medicine nowadays. When we talk about stem cell transplants or bone marrow transplants, we're talking about a procedure that's usually used to treat cancers of the blood or the lymphatic system. And simply put, we take stem cells that are able to make blood and we transfer them either from one individual to another or sometimes from one individual back to that individual as part of the procedure to try and help cure malignancy. I think most people have heard the term bone marrow transplant. Mm-hmm. It's a term that's been around for a long time, and that tells you that the cells are coming from the bone marrow, but it's not a very specific term. It doesn't tell you that much about the procedure because there are many different types of stem cell transplant.
Let's start out talking a little bit, if we could, about where someone gets their own stem cells back, which you just mentioned. What would be some of the examples of instances where you would recommend that?
Well, that procedure we refer to as an autologous stem cell transplant. And the term autologous means taking cells from one individual and using them to give back to that individual. And when we're doing that, really what we're doing is trying to give more effective chemotherapy. The chemotherapy or the usual medicines that are used to treat a lot of different cancers, they're very effective for certain cancers like leukemia or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And we know from many years of experience that giving very high doses of those chemotherapy drugs can sometimes help to cure people who wouldn't be cured otherwise. Now, that's not always safe to do. That's where stem cells can be quite helpful to us. We have a patient who needs these high doses of chemotherapy, but we're concerned that they're going to affect the blood counts in a serious way or a dangerous way. We can use the patient's own stem cells and give them after we've administered the high-dose chemotherapy, and that will help the patient's blood counts recover in a relatively quick fashion and make the procedure safe. So an autologous stem cell transplant is really a way of giving a higher dose chemotherapy in a safe fashion, and the stem cells come from the patient, and then they support the patient through the procedure.
And again, maybe just to reemphasize to the listeners out there, Stuart, the types of cancers that you typically treat
Sure.
with this autologous transplant
Sure.
approach?
In order for this procedure to be helpful to a patient, they have to have a cancer that responds to ordinary doses of chemotherapy. So this is not a treatment for everybody. Some typical examples would be non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Hodgkin's disease, some types of what we call germ cell tumors. Testicular cancer is a good example. I think everyone's familiar with Lance Armstrong. Mm-hmm. There are some other diseases where there's been a lot of research, and we think that sometimes an autologous stem cell transplant may be useful. Breast cancer, I think, is sort of a controversial issue and is not a very commonly transplanted disease nowadays. There may be some instances where that's helpful. The other disease is multiple myeloma, which counts for, at our institution, it's the leading indication for autologous transplant right now.
All right, so I want to address the issue of stem cell transplant. People sort of think this is a controversial term. Is it
right.
The same stem cells?
No.
Okay.
It's a good point. We're talking about adult hematopoietic stem cells, and what that means is these are cells that reside primarily in the bone marrow and in the bloodstream and in some organs like the spleen probably. And these are more grown-up stem cells, and their purpose is to make blood. So these are not the embryonic stem cells that you hear about mm-hmm. In the news where there's a lot of controversy. These are cells that have actually been identified for many, many years back into the 1980s and we know have been useful for these sort of procedures for quite a long time. So there's very little controversy about the use of these cells and the issues regarding the use for research and how they're obtained, you know, really aren't controversial.
Great. Stuart, we've already talked about autologous transplantation. What about allogeneic transplantation, which is another term that we hear about?
Sure. Well, this is why it's important when we talk about transplant to sort of define our terms. When we say someone had a bone marrow transplant, for instance, that doesn't tell us if the cells came from the patient or if they came from a different person. So an allogeneic transplant would be when we need to get the cells to do a transplant, but they come from a donor other than the patient themselves. That might be a brother or a sister. It might be another family member in some instances. And if family members are not available to donate cells, and there's a variety of reasons why that might be, we can search a database of over 7 million volunteer donors now through the National Marrow Donor Registry. And look for an unrelated donor who may be compatible with the patient. And so that an allogeneic transplant involves a transplant procedure, maybe very similar in some ways to an autologous transplant in terms of giving high doses of chemotherapy. But the cells come from a different person, and that really changes the nature of that procedure.
Stuart, it sounds like in some ways a complex decision to make as to who needs a transplant. Is there a team approach in terms of talking about the patient and trying to figure out who needs it and who doesn't?
Sure, sure. There are a lot of things that go into making that decision. Transplant procedures have risks, and they're not the same for each transplant procedure, and they're not the same for each patient or even each disease. We see patients frequently who are referred to us for opinions, may not be for a transplant opinion, and they're presented at our weekly transplant conferences. It's a team of physicians, radiotherapists, pathologists, radiologists, people who review all of the details of a case, and then a decision about, you know, what we think the most effective therapy would be, which may be an autologous transplant or an allogeneic transplant, or may not be a transplant at all, but we try and balance the risks of the procedures against what we think the benefit of a transplant would be. In most cases, when we're suggesting for a patient that they have a transplant, we're trying to cure their disease.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always the case. Multiple myeloma is an example where transplant therapy using a patient's own cells or an autologous transplant is sort of a true sort of tried therapy that we know is very effective in inducing remissions for patients, and those remissions often last longer than remissions that can be obtained with any other therapy. So it's a very useful treatment, but it's not a treatment that we think of as being likely to cure a patient's disease. It enables them to get off chemotherapy for some time.
We'd like to remind you, you can email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu, and we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Then please stay tuned to learn more information about stem cell transplants with Dr. Stuart Seropian from the Yale Cancer Center.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Hamden.
10 years ago, when I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia, there was no cure. After teaching math for 35 years, I was forced to retire. Then I met Dr. Tom Duffy at the Yale Cancer Center. He told me about a new procedure called a mini stem cell transplant. He encouraged me to put my life in the hands of Dr. Stuart Seropian, one of the few doctors in the country doing this procedure. On January 17, 2004, I had a stem cell transplant at the Yale Cancer Center. At age 70, I feel like a new man. I owe a great debt of gratitude to the terrific staff at Yale Cancer Center. They literally saved my life.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. Stuart Seropian, who's an expert in stem cell transplant at the Yale Cancer Center.
So Stuart, just picking up where we left off in the last segment, when do you typically think about using a transplant in a particular patient? Is it early on in their treatment course, or is it typically reserved after patients received multiple cycles of therapy?
That really depends on the patient and the disease in question. An example of a patient where a transplant might be a very useful therapy early in the course of their disease would be an acute leukemia. And not all patients, but many of those patients will achieve a remission with standard treatments, but we know based on the features of the disease that that remission is not going to last for very long. So relapse is often predictable. And if we expect that's going to happen in a short period of time, and we have an alternative treatment, namely an allogeneic transplant from a matched brother or sister, for those patients, we'll often recommend the transplant in first remission as the best chance to cure the disease. And we do know in that particular disease that if patients relapse, it's often difficult to get them in a medical position where they can have a transplant later on and the results aren't as good. So there's an example of a disease where we would suggest a transplant early in the course of their illness. There are other diseases, for instance, certain types of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, like large B-cell lymphoma, that's one of the more common types of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Many patients have a chance for a cure with standard therapy, and transplantation in first remission might improve that chance for cure somewhat, but it's not always necessary, and it does increase the risk of their therapy. And those patients are more likely, if they do relapse, to be in a good position to have a transplant in second remission where the cure rates are still pretty good. So that's a disease where we probably, for many patients, wouldn't necessarily think about transplant in first remission. If the features of their disease were such that we didn't think that they could stay in remission for long, we might do a transplant in first remission. But these are the things that come up at our conferences, and we debate, and we look at the medical literature.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about donors. So if someone in the listening audience is asked to participate in a donor drive, is that painful? I mean, what can they expect?
Well, participating in a donor drive is very easy because it's just a blood sample that needs to be drawn from the arm. So that's no different from going to your doctor, mm-hmm. needing to have some blood work. The way that we match donors, and we're talking about allogeneic transplant now,
yeah.
When we have a patient who needs stem cells from somebody else, the way we match them is we look at certain genes that govern how immune systems see each other. And we try and match those up between the patient and the donor. So the National Marrow Donor Program keeps a database of all the results of these blood tests with what are referred to as people's HLA types. Those are these genes that we need to know about in order to match a donor and a patient. And the National Marrow Donor Program is linked with multiple other registries worldwide. So we have access to that database and can go and identify potential donors for a patient very, very readily.
Now, taking it a step further, if someone's actually chosen to be a donor because they do match, same question, is that a difficult, is it a painful procedure, something to be afraid of?
So the options for a donor, whether it's someone who's related or unrelated, is to donate either bone marrow or to donate stem cells that we get out of the blood. Let's refer to those as blood stem cells. Very similar grafts or blood products that we're getting, whether it's out of the bone marrow or the blood, we're after the same stem cells, the ones that can rebuild the blood system for the patient. A bone marrow harvest involves going to the operating room and having multiple bone marrow biopsies, and that's usually done under general anesthesia or spinal anesthesia. That can be a bit uncomfortable, as you might imagine, not during the procedure, because one is under anesthesia, but afterwards, mm-hmm. Discomfort in the hip area that can last for a while. The advantage there is that it can, take an afternoon, and people don't have to be out of work necessarily. I think that's appealing to some donors. Mm-hmm. Blood stem cell collection is a little different. We use a medicine called filgrastim, or GCSF. Some people know it as Neupogen, and that's given as an injection. It's kind of like an insulin shot that people take under the skin, mm-hmm. for a couple of days. And that helps to get the stem cells out of the bone marrow and out of the other areas in the body other than the bloodstream where they may be hiding. And filgrastim gets those cells into the blood, and then they can be filtered out of the blood. It takes a longer period of time. The shots need to be given for a couple of days, and then the filtering the blood, which is referred to as pheresis, that goes on for a couple of hours each afternoon until we get enough cells, and that might be 1 or 2 days.
Stuart, is there a difference in outcome, whether or not one's using the peripheral blood cells as opposed to the bone marrow harvest?
There are some differences in the products and some differences in when we like to use one or the other. For autologous transplant, if we go back to the transplant where a patient uses their own cells, we always use the peripheral blood, mm-hmm. stem cells. We harvest them out of the bloodstream. And the reason for that is that the stem cell number that we get is quite a bit higher, and that helps the blood counts get better after a transplant. More quickly, and so that's a preferable product for autologous transplant, and that's the major issue there. And peripheral blood has really replaced bone marrow for that procedure. Things are a little different in allogeneic transplant because the number of stem cells that we get from the bone marrow or the blood is not the only thing that we have to look at there. For an allogeneic transplant, we're really swapping one person's immune system for another, so we're transferring a lot of different cells, and we're expecting that the donor's stem cells are going to basically reconstitute or rebuild that patient's immune system with a whole new set of cells. So the composition of the graft is a little bit different with bone marrow. There are somewhat fewer lymphocytes, and these are cells that can sometimes cause problems in an allogeneic transplant. So there are some institutions that may prefer bone marrow. We prefer the blood stem cell grafts for allogeneic transplant most of the time. The major difference right now that people see between the two graft products, one of those major differences is that the blood counts do still recover more quickly in an allogeneic transplant using the blood stem cell grafts. So that's an advantage. Mm-hmm. That's probably offset a little bit by these other cells in the graft that may cause more problems in terms of immune recovery or graft versus host disease, which is something we haven't touched on yet, but that's the problem that can complicate things.
Well, we'd like to, again, remind you that you can email your questions to us and to Dr. Seropian at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story. And then please stay tuned to learn more about stem cells transplant with Dr. Stuart Seropian from the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. Cancer patients become cancer survivors the first day they're diagnosed. There are over 10 million cancer survivors in the U.S., and the numbers keep growing. However, there are long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, impaired growth, and an increased risk of second cancers. Ending cancer treatment can be both exciting and scary. Most people are relieved to be finished with the demands of treatment, but many also feel concerned about whether the cancer will come back and what they can do to prevent a relapse. Cancer survivors require long-term specialized care and support. For more information, log on to www.yalecancercenter.org. That address once again, www.yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller. I'm here with Dr. Ed Chu and our guest, Dr. Stuart Seropian, who is an expert on stem cell transplant at the Yale Cancer Center. So, Stuart, when someone receives a bone marrow transplant, is that similar to a heart or a lung transplant where it's in the operating room, or how's it done?
It's a good question. I didn't really mention the specifics of how cells are transferred. To a patient, receiving a bone marrow product or a stem cell product is really quite similar to getting a blood transfusion. So there's no surgery involved. There's no injection into the bone. These are blood cells, and they're pretty smart. They know how to get to the parts of the body that they need to, in particular the bone marrow. We infuse them in the bloodstream, just like getting a blood transfusion. It may take a little longer, or in fact, in some cases, when we use peripheral blood, for instance, it takes less time because the volume of the product is smaller. The transfusion is usually tolerated like a blood transfusion is. And the cells make their way to the bone marrow, and it does take some time for them, the cells, to start working. It may take 10 days, 2 weeks. It's not, logistically speaking, not a terribly complicated procedure in terms of how we transfer the cells to the patient.
Stuart, at the end of the last segment, you mentioned one of the potential complications, really serious complications, that affects patients who undergo allogeneic stem cell transplant, and that's graft versus host disease. Maybe if you could expand on that for our listeners.
Sure. Graft versus host disease is an illness that patients can get after an allogeneic transplant if there is any incompatibility between the donor's immune system and the patient's, and the way this is manifest is not always the same in patients. A rash, for instance, might be a minor sign of graft versus host disease. More serious signs would be if the bowels are affected and patients have loose bowel movements, or if the liver is affected. Those are common organs. The matching that we do to match patients and donors gives us good information about the feasibility of a transplant in terms of making sure the cells will go into the recipient's body and start functioning without being rejected. And that matching information is very good at predicting that. It's not quite as good at predicting whether or not graft versus host disease may occur, because there are many genes and proteins in the body that we can't really test for. There may be minor differences between donors and patients. I should mention that while graft versus host disease is an illness that patients can get, and that can be serious, it's one of the things that will sometimes give us pause about doing a transplant. It can also be in some ways a good thing. So one of the major reasons we choose to recommend...
And maybe can you explain why that is?
Sure. When we're trying to decide what kind of transplant a patient might benefit from, we know we can give high-dose chemotherapy in either type of procedure, but when we replace the immune system with the donor's immune system, sometimes that immune system may also help to fight cancer in the patient. We commonly refer to that as a graft versus tumor effect, a graft versus leukemia effect, and simply put, some of the cells from the donor may be able to kill cancer cells in the patient. And that's an advantage that is not present in an autologous transplant, because using the patient's own cells, and they already have cancer. We know their immune system hasn't been able to fight off the disease. So that's a reason why we may choose an allogeneic transplant in someone who we think might not be curable otherwise. And we are more likely to see that in patients who get some graft versus host disease. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Stuart, Yale is the only cancer center in Connecticut performing allogeneic bone marrow transplant, and I know there's also research that you and your team are doing as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the research that's being done at Yale?
Sure. I think probably one of the biggest changes in the way we do transplant, allogeneic transplant, over the last 10 years in an area that's been of interest to us in terms of research are what we refer to as reduced intensity or mini transplants. So we've had several protocols looking at this particular type of allogeneic transplant. This is a transplant that really was born out of a desire to take advantage of the immune effects of transplant, or the graft versus leukemia effects. There are times when high-dose chemotherapy may not be a really important part of the transplant procedure, either because we don't think it'll help a patient as much, or because a patient may be older or have a medical condition. So there are ways now with newer drugs, newer chemotherapy drugs or other immunosuppressive drugs that help us to do a transplant with less toxicity. We've had programs doing those kind of transplants for patients who need an unrelated transplant, for instance, or for patients who have a matched sibling but are older or have medical conditions. So that's one area of research. The other major area of research that the Yale program is really quite interested in, I think that sort of a future of our program is really based on trying to find ways to reduce the incidence of graft versus host disease, and in particular to try and do that without impacting on this benefit, the immune benefit of a transplant. And so that includes some laboratory research that's done by members of our team, and then also some clinical programs, looking at new drugs, for instance. We have a protocol that should be opening soon for patients who we can only find an unrelated donor, but that unrelated donor isn't fully matched. And you might correctly intuit that that can be a more dangerous transplant if we have a donor who's not fully matched. So we have some new drugs we're looking at. Early results are looking good in terms of preventing serious graft versus host disease in those patients.
Stuart, picking up on what Ken said, that we're the only center here in Connecticut performing allogeneic stem cell transplants, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe we're the only FACT accredited program in the state of Connecticut. Maybe you can explain to our listeners what that actually means.
Sure. The FACT is an organization that inspects programs and looks at all the policies and procedures that go into making sure that a program is collecting cells, is selecting patients, and performing transplants in a safe manner. They accredit programs much in the same way that a lot of accrediting bodies accredit hospitals, in terms of really just the way that the program works from start to finish. So they come every couple of years and they inspect the blood bank and the apheresis unit where the cells are collected, and interview all the members of our team, look in the hospital, look at our transplant unit. And we are the only FACT accredited program for allotransplant in the state.
Well, if you have further questions about stem cell transplant, please email us at healthline@yale.edu. You can also go to the Yale Cancer Center website, which is yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. Stuart, any sort of last bits of information you'd like to share with the listening audience in terms of where the field is headed?
Well, I think... transplant in general is considered, I think, by many to be kind of a scary prospect, and I think that's changed significantly over the last 10 years. So if people have questions, we're always open to answering them. If people want to email in, if they're being taken care of by an oncologist around the state, can ask them and contact us.
And again, I guess the other point to emphasize is that it's important to go to a center as ours or yours that's accredited, right, for transplantation.
Sure.
So, Stuart, it's been great having you here on our show. Please join us next week for another program where we'll interview a special guest expert. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.